Have you made an honest review? Jump onto fifthwrist.com and read real takes by real owners about their watches. And of course, get involved and write about what's on your wrist. Fifthwrist.com is your independent space to talk watches.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Piece Unique with Fifth Wrist Radio, a show focusing on the artistry, technique, and lore of watch modding. I'm your host, Matt, and with us tonight is another very special guest, Theo of Mod Mode Watches. How are you doing tonight, Theo?
I'm doing good, thank you. It's really good to be able to chat with you, Matt.
Likewise. I'm really excited. So here at Fifth Wrist, we have some traditions. We always start with a wrist check and a drink check. So why don't we just start with the drink check? Are you imbibing on anything? I think it's pretty early in the day for you, where you are in Singapore.
Yep. We just passed noon at the moment, so I've got me a coffee.
Nice.
Just in a fun little cup. But yeah, I do tend to make my own coffees, or the wife makes them. And we enjoy having, you know, different beans from different parts of the world. So yeah.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. Do they grow coffee in Singapore? I can't think of a coffee.
No, we don't have plantations here, but we are very fortunate to have easy access to some of the largest coffee growing regions, Indonesia, Vietnam, etc. And of course, we get a lot of the Brazilian stuff in as well. So yeah, lots of micro roasts this year, and we do enjoy a good coffee.
Cool, yum. Well, it's nighttime for me. It's 9 p.m., so I'm having a cocktail per usual. I'm having it's rum, some Meyer lemons from down the street, and some Falernum, and a little bit of honey, just a little concoction.
I might have to have one of that tonight.
I know, yeah. What about on the wrist? What are you wearing today?
Yep. So on the wrist, I've got the Project MM1. So that's the mod watch that I've launched recently, but I've got that on the rubber strap today. So put it a bit up to the camera.
Looks
but yeah,
great.
This is the Pioneer Edition that I launched. And yeah, very happy to be able to wear it myself as well.
It's so amazing. I'm really excited to talk to you about that. Really quick, I'm wearing a Ondo creation that I'm pretty sure you've been involved with because it's on your website.
Awesome.
It's the date window flower. You know, it's got a lot of, it's up to you to say what it looks like. It has multiple, it could be a Star Wars thing, all kinds of stuff.
That dial is absolutely amazing, isn't it? I thought that the symmetry really worked well. And I like how Yu has managed to keep his branding in there, but really subtle as well.
Oh, it's perfect. Yeah, it has this, if you haven't seen it, you should check it out. And it's sold on modmodewatches.com. It has this, the Ando A in the middle. It's black on black, and it's got this super shiny lacquer dial. It's just really cool. Yeah. It's just a really incredible dial. It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think from a watch part perspective, it's really so cool because it's also got that blue loom element as well. So he's managed to put it, you know, in both the black sections as well as the white sections of the indices.
Okay.
I think that's the really cool part, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just such a clever watch. I'm really happy. I've got it in a very plain case right now. I might switch which case it goes into. So anyway, I'm digging it. It's really cool. Good job, you.
Nice.
Thank you so
much.
Why don't we start with maybe, I want to talk about so many of your projects, but let's just start with like from the beginning, like how did you get into watches themselves and how did you get into modding?
Yeah. For me, I've always been fascinated with watches. Like even as a kid, I would always be trying to get onto my dad's Casios and stuff like that. And probably one of the, I would say fondest for me, but probably not for him. One of the fondest memories was when I took one of his Casios and I looked at it and it said shock resistant, right? So I said, okay, this thing should be able to take some shock. Let's see what it can do. And so I took it and I knocked it, you know, against the table. And of course, the LCD screen immediately had this big black blotch over the top of it. Yeah, so I did get into some trouble, but that's one of my earliest memories of watches. And then over the years, you know, I had a little bit of watches when I was growing up, simple things that parents would buy for their kids and all. And fast forward to some years back, and, you know, I was a little bit bored with some of the watches that I had. One of the pieces that I had was an Invicta. I think a lot of the guys in the modding scene would be very familiar with the Invicta. I know when you were talking to 444, he talked a lot about his Invictus as well. And mine had started to cloud a little bit under the crystal. And at that point, I had absolutely no idea what to do with watches. I had never opened a watch myself. If I needed a battery change, I always brought it down to a store in a mall or something. And I decided that, hey, I've got to do a little bit of finding out on what I can do to this watch. Or is it the end of the road for it? Because I had paid less than $100. If it cost too much to fix it, it would not be worth it. So then I went on the internet, found information from lots of guys, and decided to give it a go myself. And that's how it started with modding.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
And what year was
and
that?
And then, of course, well, that was, I don't know, probably 5-6 years ago now.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the first step, right? Cleaning the crystal. And putting it all back together, watch works. Okay, perfect. I haven't messed anything up. So that's all good. And then I started to get a little bit curious because, you know, all the guys were posting on different forums and stuff like that. Like on Facebook, the Seiko Mods group was a lot smaller back then as well. And I started to see a lot of posts from different modders. And I thought, wow, this looks really cool. I would like to get one of these pieces myself. And so I reached out to one of the modders out there who shall remain unnamed, and he quoted me a price. And I thought, yeah, this sounds like a reasonable price for a customized timepiece. It's a Seiko movement, should be relatively reliable and stuff like that. I knew absolutely nothing about modding. And then a friend of mine said to me, hey, do you know how much these parts actually cost? And so that, of course, got me curious, and I started to find out a little bit more about what the parts cost. And I said, yeah, maybe I can give it a shot myself. And that's how it started with modding. So, you know, I started doing it for myself and for my brother and for friends and stuff like that. And then people started to ask me questions about where the parts came from, and, you know, asking me to help them build watches and stuff like that. And that's really how ModMod came off the ground. So it started with selling through Facebook, and then eventually I built it into a proper website that now runs on its own.
So cool. Wow. I mean, a lot of people get interested in modding, but most of them don't turn it into this amazing business with the OEM dials and custom things and integrated. I mean, the projects. It's really incredible.
No, I mean,
you should be proud of yourself.
No, thank you. I'm really happy, and it's the way it's grown has just been such a blessing. And I think I've taken it really slow, step by step. These days, I don't take on commission jobs anymore, just because, you know, I would rather focus on the parts and supplying people with some good quality parts. And of course, warranties and stuff like that. I always say to people who are taking on mod jobs that, hey, you've got to be able to stand by your claims. If you're making claims about water resistance or water resistance, or if you're offering people a warranty for a year or 2 years or whatever, what does that mean for your business? What does that mean for your reputation? So yeah, I would still build for friends, or, you know, if once in a while when a particularly compelling story comes along, I would help out. There was a guy in Japan who bought a bunch of parts from me, and he thought that he could have it modified. He brought it down to the watchmaker, and his watchmaker said, no, absolutely not. I'm having nothing to do with this. This is not how a watch should be treated and stuff like that. And so I said to him, yeah, you know, I'll do it for you. Just all part of a good story, and for you to be able to bring it back to your watchmaker and say, hey, this was the watch I brought down the last time. These are the parts that have gone in. It can be done. Broaden your mind. It's achievable and stuff like that. So yeah, I enjoy doing that sort of project.
Nice. Well, I'm always so impressed with people that do commissions, like 444. Because I've done a couple. And the time it takes, and then you put it out there, and hopefully they treat it with at least a little bit of care, and they don't have a you know, warranty. I never had any warranty, but it just, you know, my kudos to you for actually like putting in the risk and the effort and all the time it takes. I think it's really hard.
Absolutely. I mean, I work with so many of those guys out there. JP, for example, who does JP Wrist Shop. And a lot of these guys are very, very reputable. They are able to back their watches up with a proper warranty. Jack Hypoxia as well. So many of these names. But these days, you're having more and more people who are coming onto the modding scene, and that's great. You know, everyone has their story to tell. Everyone has their creativity to put into a watch. That's perfect. But then the quality really comes in, and you know, you've got to look at how these watches are being built. Not everyone has a vacuum room, for example.
Right.
How do we keep dust out of watches? How do we test for water pressure and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Do you find like your customers for your parts are more seasoned modders or brand new, or maybe you're not even really sure? What's your sense of it?
It's all across the spectrum, really. Personally, I do enjoy working with both groups, right? So the seasoned guys, of course, they know exactly what they're talking about. They ask mm-hmm. for a particular part. They know what they want it to do. They know what cases it would fit in, what it wouldn't fit in, and stuff like that. They are able to mix and match across manufacturers or across suppliers. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty easy, right? We work with them and we say, okay, this is what you want to do for this project. I've got this and that, and you could match with so-and-so part. Now, for the new guys, it's a lot more different, right? Because a lot of guys who are starting out for the first time, they do not have an idea of what this entails. They do not want mm-hmm. to mess up maybe an expensive watch. They don't want to break anything. And there are also guys who will say, yeah, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to jump straight into it. So I do take a bit of time, especially when it's someone who is modding for the first time. If they reach out to me on Instagram or whatever, I do have a little bit of a conversation with them to make sure that they kind of know what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. And what I like to do for the brand new guys, especially if they tell me that, you know, this is their first time modding and stuff like that, what I do is normally to throw in a couple of parts that are really inexpensive parts or perhaps even secondhand parts, just a few hands, just a few blank dowels as well, just so that they can give it a go. And I feel that once they get over that mental hurdle of saying that I'm doing this as a complete newbie, it gets so much easier. Like you have talked on this show about placing the second hand, for example, right? And if you've got a black lacquer dowel like you have in your watch today, if you've got a glossy black dowel, you don't want to touch it with anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And as a newbie, that would be incredibly scary. So what I do is I provide them some junk parts or some clearance parts, if you would, free of charge, just so that they can try it out. And once they are more comfortable, they can work on the expensive parts. And I think that helps a lot of them.
That's awesome, yeah. You know, I find people in the modding community like are so charitable with their time. Like I'm big on the Reddit Seiko Mod forum. I just try to, you know, pipe in and help people out. And I just think it's one of the very positive online communities out there. There's not a whole lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, as with every community, there will be some people who always have their elitist comments and stuff like that. But I like to think of myself as a hobbyist. I don't look at myself as a watchmaker because I've never been trained as a watchmaker. You know. But I think from one hobbyist to one hobbyist, there is no such thing as too new. There's no such thing as, oh, you know, I only want to do high-end stuff or whatever. There's something for every budget, right? You can have people who are modding a $50 watch or a $500 watch.
Yeah, totally. I guess on the subject of communities, I do want to talk more about your projects. But one thing I've always wanted to know more about is just the Singapore watch scene. It seems like, especially in the micro brand scene and then just the modding part scene, it's just seems there's so much going on. And it's not the biggest country in the world. So I guess I don't expect you to like relay the entire history of the watch industry in Singapore. But maybe why is there so many cool things coming out of Singapore in terms of watches? What's your theory?
That's interesting. Well, as you've rightly pointed out, Singapore is a tiny country, right? So I normally say that it's so small that you can drive all the way from the airport, which is in the east of the country, to all the way to the west of the country within an hour. And then you'll be on the bridge over into the next country, which is Malaysia. So that's how small Singapore is. But in terms of watches, they've been around here for a long time. One of the industries that was set up in the early days of Singapore was actually by Seiko. So there is a Seiko factory in the northern part of Singapore. And there are Seiko watches that are still in circulation that have got parts that were made in that Singapore factory.
Whoa,
so we're talking, not too far back, right? Even watches like the Seiko 7002. So that's the predecessor of the SKX007. So that had a series where there were movements that were made in the Singapore factory. So I think a lot of us have had that consciousness around a little bit of a small watch industry. But I think it's because a lot of us, we get bored very easily, right? Singapore is a very small country and we need to find something different to do. And that's how a lot of us got started into modding. So we look at our watches and we say, oh, can I do something different? Because everyone can walk into a store and buy a Seiko 5 or something, but then that would be the same as thousands of other watches out there. But if you're able to put your personal spin on it, and I think that's why we really like that, if you're able to put your personal spin on it and have something a little bit customized on your wrist, then that allows you to stand out from the crowd a bit. And I think this happens across many of the things that you see in Singapore, from the innovation around the food industry, the innovation around the drinks industry and stuff like that. I think it's just an economy that we know that we are an island and we need to look outwards. Otherwise, all that we see is what's within our small little island.
Interesting. Well, I think it's great. And for those that don't know, like, it seems like all the major modding companies come from Singapore. Nomoki, Mod Mode, what else? I'm missing a big
Lucius
one.
Atelier.
Lucius, yeah.
Como Works, which does amazing DAOs. Yeah. Well, they focus purely on DAOs, and they make some of my favorite DAOs. These days, even Straps that we have as well. There's this guy that I work very closely with, Clockwork Republic, and he's got very exacting standards of perfection that he goes into to make sure that when he launches N-Links, they really fit well. So he's got N-Links for the SKX, for the Turtle, for the Samurai, etc. Just amazing stuff and really good quality FKM straps. And I post about it on my Instagram all the time because I'm personally a fan of those straps. Like, I own every single thing that he has.
I'll have to check that out. Do you ever speak with the other modding company? Is there working together, or is it kind of just totally separate?
No, I mean, my personal view on it is that it is a community that is small enough for us to be able to work together on certain projects. At the end of the day, from a business sense, yes, we are competitors, but there definitely are things that we can do together as well. So some of the names that I've mentioned, for example, with Ando and with Clockwork Republic, I work with them in terms of their parts and, you know, how they are being distributed around the world as well. Locally, definitely, I work a lot with Como in terms of the DAOs that we use. And I think it's not just within Singapore, but also internationally. Yeah, so to be able to work with providers of parts from different countries, that's really cool. Someone sees that you've been able to do that, and then they are able to do it as well. To me, I prefer to work on collaborations more than competition. Yeah.
Nice, cool. What are some of your... I know you've done some collaborations with... Well, I guess the stuff that you've done with Ando Ando Ando, is it kind of he creates this and you're actually helping it get made or get it distributed, or
so with Yu, it's very different. So he's a designer to every sense of the word, and he really goes into the detail of how his watch case should look like, of how his DAO should look like. That is completely him. 100% of the credit goes to him in terms of the design of it, the liaising, the production of it. I help him mainly with distribution. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's as far as the collaboration with Yu has gone. However, I'm very happy to have worked with different micro brands as well. And some of the agreements that I have with them prevents me from mentioning them by name, because obviously they do not want to be viewed as, they do not want their sources to be reviewed and stuff like that in terms of where their parts come from. But it's been great to be able to work with these guys and to be able to bring their dreams really into reality, because a lot of people have that idea that, you know, they want to create something different. They don't want to have a Rolex logo on their watch, or they don't want to have a Seiko logo. They want to launch their own company. They want to put their own design spin on it. Or perhaps sometimes the big watch companies don't do exactly what you would want to have. So they want to be able to come up with their own company and their own line of watches. And it might not always be a massive line of 5,000 watches. They might want to do something smaller, a much smaller run, or a limited edition run and stuff like that. And those are the projects that I really enjoy working on. So one of the companies that I worked with, they're based in Europe, and they had access to a proper watchmaker. And so they wanted to be able to say that, hey, our watches are made within our country, within our town, but we need access to some of these parts. And they can't possibly be buying parts at retail if they're buying 200 cases, 200 dials, 200 sets of hands. It just doesn't make sense. At the same time, they didn't want to work with a factory that would give them ready-made watches, 200 watches, because then they wouldn't be able to say that they have gone through those QC checks and every step is personally assembled within their town and stuff like that. So I worked with them around some design elements, and making sure, of course, that quality was always at the top of every discussion, right? So their dial, for example, they wanted it to have an enamel finish. They wanted it to have supernova loom that could actually be tested by supernova and could be certified as well. Yeah, so that's how we managed to work on some of those really quality parts for them.
Cool. Excellent. Do you still, you know, sometimes I find after doing this for a few years, you kind of, you just don't mod as much. Do you still do a lot of modding yourself just for your own personal pleasure?
Yes, I do. And I think, you know, really that's one of the reasons why I stopped taking commissioned builds, because after a while, there were people who were constantly asking for a very similar style of build and stuff like that. And to me, that's not really what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to work with something that is completely left field, something that people wouldn't think would work, something that wouldn't make sense, really. And so I've got a bunch of watches here, and I'll try and describe them in as much detail, because for a podcast, people will not be able to visualize, to be able to see the watches. But one of them that I'm holding up right now, it's got a lot of detail that's engraved into both the dial as well as the bezel insert. And more than that, the crown sits on the left side, though I wear my watch on the left wrist. So when I take pictures, like, you know, of a wrist shot, it makes absolutely no sense, because you can't adjust the crown while the watch is on your wrist. But my answer is that if I've got a 44mm case on my arm, which is not skinny by any measure, I don't want the crown to be digging into my wrist. And so if I'm changing my watch every day, it doesn't matter that the crown is on the left of it. So, you know, that actually sent me down the road of working on different movements and having the NH35 modified for a left-hand crown and then for a left-hand 9 o'clock date position.
9 o'clock. Gotcha. So,
The crown's on your left.
How do you do that? Do you...
So the date wheel has to be completely
upside
customized.
Upside down date wheel. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because if you rotate it, right, it's going to be facing the wrong way. But not only that, you've got 31 days on the circular disc. If you flip it 180 degrees, it's going to be out of alignment either way.
Of course, because...
Yeah.
Well, I won't get into
that.
So the
we had to customize date wheels to make sure that they would line up with that as well. And, you know, that sent me down this whole path of saying, hey, if I'm doing one, I've got to do 100 of them. And if I've done it in white, I've got to do it in black as well. If I have it in black, I need it in red and blue and all that. And eventually I started having more and more of these permutations. And it came to a stage where people were writing to me saying, oh, you know, can I have it in Klingon? Can I have it in this German dialect that my village speaks and stuff? And, you know, it's been fascinating to be able to work with people. So we came up with an Arabic day and date, because Seiko has the Arabic day, but they do not have the Arabic date.
Yes.
Yeah. And then having loom on it, having it in different colors, and eventually building to having, you know, one of the largest collections of calendar wheels for the NH series of movements.
That's funny. Yeah, no, I did notice that on your website. It's like, wow, you've got, you know, every color and loomed in different colors and really cool stuff. Yeah. Do you have a 9 o'clock?
It's been fun to be able to do that.
Do you sell a 9 o'clock one? That's like a pretty obscure, nice.
Yes,
cool.
I do. So the one that's in front of your screen got the crown on the left, date window in the 9 o'clock position, and you can see that the date is perfectly lined up.
Nice. That's a cool, like, Bell and Ross. Cool. Beautiful case.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's interesting, because this square case, when it came up to be available for modding, everyone was saying that, hey, this is the Bell and Ross case. And that kind of got me a little bit, because Bell and Ross does not talk about it, but there is a Seiko Silver Wave flight instrument that came in this square format. So that, to me, I've always phrased it as, it's a Seiko mod, like custom built, NH35 based, but it does have some Seiko heritage in there.
Ah, I see. Well, Bell & Ross is a pretty new company, so I think that I think they call it the Contra or something, right? So that Seiko must have predated Bell & Ross.
Oh, yeah, no, those are old. So the Silver Wave cockpit instruments, I believe they are 1970s, 1980s pieces. Yeah, so that's one that, you know, I would love to be able to acquire. I haven't found one in a reasonably good condition and at the right price, because they have this kind of little rubber frontage on them, and a lot of them have degraded over the years.
Gotcha. Well, so often we find Seiko did it first. It's very, very common. They usually beat the Europeans to the punch.
I was going to ask something. What was it?
I don't know. I was just going to say how I've been like lusting after various. I think Seiko Silver Wave is like an super underappreciated little weird stuff. And they do all this cool, like two tone, like small seconds Silver Wave watches. There's a whole lot of cool stuff. Silver Wave.
Yeah. It's not that expensive.
The contra is,
of course. I mean, once you start looking into vintage, it's just so broad, right? Seiko has done so many models. If you have the chance to visit the Seiko Museum in Ginza, in Tokyo, one of these days, I would say allocate an entire day, because you're going to spend the entire day looking at all of the different watches that they have, from pocket watches to the early chronometers, having them certified in Switzerland and stuff like that. Yeah. It's just absolutely fascinating. Yeah. I think this is a good segue, what you mentioned about them having small seconds and stuff like that, because I think these days modding has gotten a little bit of a bad name, if you would. Mm-hmm. People say that, oh, they just look alike of fancy Swiss brands, you know, your Rolex lookalike or your Patek lookalike and stuff like that. And I think it's undeniable that a lot of these designs would really be viewed as heritage designs. Like Hublot has a very bad name in the watch industry. Fair or not, that's a separate conversation, but everyone says it's because it looks like an AP or it looks like a PP. But I've been saying to people that, hey, modding allows us to do so much more than building a lookalike of a famous watch, right? So there are so many premium parts that could go into play. There are so many guys out there who are making innovative things. Ron, whom you had on your show, he does crazy stuff with lasers. Sergey, who works out of Ukraine, he does amazing stuff with color temperature on titanium dials. I mean, these are things that you wouldn't traditionally associate with watches, but these days, hobbyists like you and me, we are able to put them into our watches if we want.
Totally. No, I think that was a big reason for even starting this podcast, is I think modding gets this kind of bad rap. It's not all subs and Yachtmaster copies. Yeah. Like, there's so much really crazy cool stuff happening, and I'm just trying to shine a light on all the cool projects out there, like stuff you do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, the first watch that Yu Ando brought to the market, it had a recessed crown, it had a brown case, and then square lux. I don't know if you've seen that one. So
the one that
I've got one of them here.
Of course I've seen that.
So it's got a ridiculous shape, if you would, but when you wear it on your wrist, it absolutely makes sense, because not only does the crown not protrude into your wrist, the shape of the case doesn't go into your wrist at all, because it ends off flat.
I mean,
so there are so many innovations, right? Because at the end of the day, we think about watches, the first image that we have is something round with a crown with 12 indices on it. But there really are so many shapes that people could go after.
I totally agree. And I just think it's also doesn't cost that much. Like, you know, to have such a unique case, for example, I mean, it should, you think it'd be crazy expensive, especially given like how much some companies charge for their watches, but it's pretty affordable. Like, it's pretty
cheaper absolutely
than,
I mean I myself as a part supplier, I'm always on the lookout for interesting parts that we can work with, right? So you may have seen on Instagram, I've posted in the past forged carbon cases and stuff like that, and recently I posted a Damascus case as well. And so I went to dig a little bit to find out where this case design had been used. And eventually I found the micro brand that had used this case design. And it was fantastic, because it was kind of samurai, but not really samurai. And it had a little bit of elements from different watches as well. And then once you have it in Damascus steel, it has that weave pattern. And it's just something that, you know, you don't replicate it elsewhere. Yeah, right. So every watch looks a little bit different. And same for forged carbon. Every watch would have its little signature and DNA as well.
Is there any, can you buy forged carbon cases for NH35? Is that something like available? I haven't seen that personally, but
yes. The short answer to that is yes. I've used them as well. I've explored a couple of projects in terms of bringing them to market. And there are also companies out there who are selling watches that have forged carbon cases. Yeah, most recently I came across an Oris. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but O-R-I-S. Yes, Swiss 7750 chronograph in there, forged carbon case, and they released it as part of their Formula One collaboration with the Williams F1 team some years back. But it's an extremely light watch, but runs a very capable 7750 chronograph movement. Which is being used in watches all over the world. The early Daytonas were based on the 7750 as well.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope we can get one that will take an NH35. That'd be really cool. Sounds like maybe you're working on it. Yeah.
Well, it's always cool to be able to work with these interesting materials. Ron cut me a dial once that was 34 millimeters because I had a carbon case that needed a 34 millimeter dial. And then, of course, we had to make sure that the hands were the right size and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so,
you
know, it's always, these problem solving that is really the fun part of modding for me. And that's why I enjoy using cases that no one has used before. Or rather, at least I think no one has used them before. They're not as common. Then you pop them into the Facebook group or you pop them into Reddit, and then people just go crazy because they're wondering, like, how have you achieved this? And actually, it's got hours and hours of research behind it and testing parts
trial
and stuff
and
like that.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, tell me more. So, speaking of projects and trying new cases, so the Pioneer MM1.
Yes.
This is an integrated bracelet case that can take an NH35, and it's super thin. Tell me where the inspiration came from, how long you've been working on it, how it came to be, because it's a pretty complicated thing to create a case, let alone a whole case, an integrated bracelet, and also an integrated rubber strap. Like it's quite an achievement.
Thanks, Matt. I mean, it's been an interesting journey, and a lot of people, when they launch a new watch brand or a new line of watches, they like to put it on a crowdfunding platform. And that involves a lot of content creation. You know, you need to have an interesting story, you need to have an interesting video, it needs to be good. Otherwise, it's just not attractive. And of course, that comes with a lot of cost. And once you put it on a crowdfunding platform, of course, there are commissions that need to be paid out as well. So I initially explored that route with a couple of friends, and we were wondering whether or not we would be able to bring such a project to market, how much we would need for it to be funded, and whether or not it would make sense paying for R&D and stuff like that. And we decided eventually not to pursue that project for a bunch of different reasons. Fast forward to sometime last year, I was thinking, hey, would there be a way for me to do this that would make it friendly for modders as well? So yes, someone could buy the watch and say, okay, I'm done with it. I've purchased the MM1 Pioneer Edition. I'm going to wear it on my wrist and be happy with it. And it's perfect, right? So it works completely fine as a watch if someone buys it that way. But because at the end of the day, Mod Mode is a company that supplies mod parts, I wanted to make sure that modders could make use of it as well. So right from the get-go, my first conversation with the supplier was not about how the outside works, but how the inside works. I needed it to take an NH35 movement. I needed it to take a 28.5mm dial. And that was something that was just absolutely non-negotiable. Because, there are models who can work with, you know.
Really quick, for those that don't know, that almost the most common dial size for the NH35, and it's in a lot, like the SKX007, that dial is basically 28.5 millimeters. So it's just kind of like, that pretty much works in a lot of different cases. And if you deviate outside of that, then things get kind of complicated. So 28.5 millimeter makes it real easy.
That was the, right from the get-go, that was for me a non-negotiable. And of course, then we started talking about the design of a case, and I wanted to look at what were some of the existing designs that the company had made. So we do not go too far off, and it's something that they would be comfortable producing for me as well, within the time frame that I wanted and within the volume that I wanted. And so all of that was doing, you know, pretty well. It went really smoothly. They submitted drawings to me and it all looked good and all that. And so I said, okay, let's move into production. They eventually sent me the first sample of the, mm-hmm. of the actual watch. And I looked at it and I said, something is not quite right with this watch. And so I told the guy, I said, you know, I'm going to open it, but I'm quite sure that this is the problem. And he said, no, be assured that it's all, you know, as per your specifications and stuff like that. And so, of course, I opened it and the dial came in at 30 millimeters. Yeah. So,
nowhere.
Yeah, that was a bummer, right? Because that was something that was non-negotiable from the start. And I measured the case. He had followed the dimensions of the case on mm-hmm. the outside. But mm. he had kept the inner dimensions to something that they are used to making, which is 430 millimeter dowels. Mm. And so I said to him that, hey, you know, so and so, I wouldn't name him. I said, hey, this is not right. It doesn't work well. So he said, what do you mean by it doesn't work? It's a completely functioning watch. This is how we've always done it. You can look at it and it works well as a watch. I say, yes, that is true. However, the people whom I'm selling it to, many of them would want to modify it and they have got parts that fit. Case in mm-hmm. point, the 28.5mm dial that you mentioned earlier. And so what I did was I built a case, a movement stack with a 28.5mm dial, and then I put a light box on the bottom of the watch to show him that light was shining mm-hmm. through. Mm-hmm. And finally, he understood what I meant. So then mm-hmm. we went through a whole process of redoing the internals of the watch. Of course, all the cases that had been made, because these are CNC machining, they can no longer be used, and so they all had to be remade. There are cases out there which are meant for 30 millimeter dowels. There's nothing wrong with that. There are 30 millimeter dowels out there as well, but they're just not fit for the purposes of a modifiable watch, in my opinion.
I think
that's how, you know, we eventually said that, okay, yes, now it's 28.5 millimeters. And I said, I'm sorry, you've broken my trust the first time. I need to see the second sample before we actually go forward for the final production, and I'll pay you the rest of the money. Yeah, so they sent it in. This time around, it was correct. It was 28.5. And yeah, it thankfully all worked smooth from there.
Cool. Congratulations. Yeah, and the case, I think, is fantastic. I'm actually surprised how thin it is. I think just over 12 millimeters.
Yes. In terms of horizontal diameter, it's just a hair shy of 40 millimeters as well. And I kept those measurements because I had spoken to many modders around, and I've looked at, you know, all of the different cases that I carry, that all of the different mod part companies out there carry as well. And there seems to be a little bit of a gap. So there are many 36 millimeter watches. Mm-hmm. There are many 40, 42, 43 millimeter watches as well. But I wanted to do something that's around 40 millimeters, but does not have a dive bezel. And that then made sure that the watch was a little bit smaller and a little bit flatter as well, because we do not have to cater for a rotating bezel.
I like too that a lot of the like 39 millimeter cases out there, they have kind of a sloped reha. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Reha. And yours is just straight. You just have a nice kind of like a nice bezel presence, but no slope reha. I think it's great. So maybe it's a tiny slope. So, I can't really tell.
Yeah. So some people have said that, you know, there are elements of the watch that reminds them of the Zenith. I think it's the Defy, if I'm not wrong. Vacheron Overseas, and of course the Tissot PRX as well. But if you look at a watch in person, there is something different on every angle from each of these watches. The watch is really angular in nature, but once it comes into the mid links, that's where they're a little bit curved, and the front face is round, and that's it. The rest of the watch is angular, completely angular. Even the bevel edges, I've done a different finishing on them. So we've got brushed, polished, brushed, polished, brushed. Yeah, so it's always something different, and it catches the light differently as well.
Totally. I think it's, I mean, there's only so many shapes that are possible, but I think it's pretty darn different, and it's very angular. It kind of reminds me of almost like a SR-71 Blackbird. It's this super angular spy plane that the American War Machine has created. So, I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. Has it been well received? I feel like it has, but Do you feel like it has?
Yes, yes. You know, I'm very thankful for the support from the community for this first project. I mean, it was a self-funded project, so, you know, it wasn't crowdfunded and anything, but many of the guys had very kindly reached out to me and said, you know, if you launch this, I'm definitely picking one up and stuff like that. And, and I'm very thankful that the vast majority of them kept to their word and stuff like that. It's been great seeing a watch that you have put effort into being out in the wild. So one of the models that I work very closely with, Mods by TH, he's a Norwegian modder, but he recently modified one of his watches, which is the MM1 Pioneer Edition, and he brought it on holiday with a different dial. So I've been able to see that watch, you know, on the beach, you know, for example. It's been great to be able to see what people do with their watches. Yeah, and something unique that doesn't exist out there as well.
So cool. So cool.
Yeah.
I'm not
I mean,
big,
I think it's always, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's always great to be able to see the personal stories that people put into their watches. Like, there are guys who reach out to me and say, hey, can I have the initials on my initials on the dial? There was a guy who had lost a close one and he wanted to have a watch built in memoriam of that person. It's been great to be able to help people to bring these stories to life. I did a couple of dials for an elderly gentleman whose son was getting married and he wanted to have a watch made for his son and also for his new daughter-in-law. So he wanted to have a male and female pair of it. It was just a very, very sweet story. And it's great to be able to contribute parts to these projects. I think that's a lot more meaningful.
You do like custom bespoke requests? I don't know for... Yeah. Do you do anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah. So to a certain extent, it is possible. And for people who reach out to me and say, oh, you know, I like to have a custom dial made. To me, that is too broad a request. So I normally ask them, what exactly do you want? For some people, all that they want is to have their own initials printed on it, or perhaps they're building a bunch of watches for their company's anniversary or something like that. That is pretty okay. And then you get people who would say, oh, you know, I want the hands to be shaped like swords, and I want this to be done in blue lume and that to be done in tritium tubes and stuff like that. And sometimes it just cannot be done. And I would rather tell people that, sorry, I'm not the right person for the job. I just told one of the guys in the local scene last week that, hey, I'm not the guy for this job, but I'll recommend you to someone else whom I know will be able to achieve what you want to do. So for me, I don't look at it as giving business to a competitor. I look at it as helping out a fellow hobbyist to be able to go to the right guy to get the job done.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. What kind of, you know, any projects that you have on the horizon, or you kind of, I need to take a break, you know, it's a lot of energy on the MM1. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. You know, I actually feel very energized with the MM1, and it's been great to be able to get responses from people, to be able to get comments as well. I'm very open to receiving feedback. And I think with the MM1 being launched and having worked with different micro brands, it's allowed me to see why sometimes when you back a project on a crowdfunding site, why does it sometimes take 3 years before the project comes out, or sometimes it never comes out. And so it's allowed me to understand the background behind some of these production issues and stuff like that, and to be able to work with new ideas. So to be able to work with new micro brands that are coming out, new materials, new designs. You know, one of the things that I told myself early when I first started Mod Mode was that, hey, now I've got access to some of these parts. Some of the suppliers trust me. They are willing to supply to me. But Seiko, as we know, does not sell to individual modders. So OEM parts are sometimes just really difficult to come by. And I told myself that once I have access, I'm not going to hoard them. I want to be able to make them available. So I'm always working on them with, you know, on different streams, and I work with suppliers from different continents as well who are able to get parts from Seiko, because they can't write to Seiko and say, I want to buy 100 pieces of this dial. Seiko will not supply it, not even if you are an authorized dealer or an authorized repairer and stuff like that. So I work with people from different continents to be able to make sure that, hey, we get a constant supply of these parts coming in, and we can share them out to different modders around the world who might only want to buy one. Or perhaps they only want to buy one second hand that they can't find anywhere else. And Seiko sells their hands in individual packages. So it's very easy. Every part has got a product code and stuff like that.
Cool. Yeah, that's I like to use Seiko parts for certain things. I just think the dials especially are so beautiful. The hands are, the loom on the hands is always incredible. But it's hard to find. And sometimes I've like sent money to some man in Belgium and, you know, hoped I got the hands. They did come through. So it's this weird little black market. So to have someone like you who's a little bit more legitimate to be able to offer it is a really nice service. And some of the dials that you have on your website and these like Presage dials are gorgeous. And it's like, it's nice for the public to have access to these. So,
And it's really exciting to see what people do with these dials. Like one of the dials that I released recently, the measurements come in at 33 millimeters, and so it's not the most common dial size, right? You've got a lot of 28.5, so you've got a lot of 30.5, 31, 32 as well, but not 33. And then if you go 35, you have got again another whole lot of cases that take them. So I was talking to a friend who was modifying these dials, and I noticed that he had it in an Explorer case. And I said, how did you manage to get a 33 millimeter dial to fit in that case? And I looked at his watch closely, and what he had done was to manually remove the outer diameter of the dial, and he had to remove the minute track as well. So it's amazing what some guys are able to do with their parts in terms of resizing dials and really modifying original dials as well. To me, that that goes back to modding at its core, and that's how the early guys, the pioneers, started out modifying existing parts, really.
Yeah, that's definitely a wild, wild west type of stuff, you know, really pushing the limits or changing the boundaries, so to speak. Any other projects on the horizon, or are you like, well, I see how hard it is to get a watch made, I'm never doing that again?
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, I feel so energized with all of this stuff that comes out, and it's always exciting, right? I think as any hobbyist would go, not just watches, but cars, bikes, whatever, hobbyists eventually start to become almost hoarders. And so it's that very fine line, and there's always a work in progress that's on my table. There's something that I want to build, or I see somebody do something interesting and it clicks in my mind and I say, oh, it's possible for me to tweak this a little bit and make it work in one of my cases. there's always a work in progress that's going on with different artisans and stuff like that. And there's a lot of stuff that I like to work on that is one-off. So I think Piece Unique as a podcast that really spoke to me, because there are a lot of pieces that I do that are just one and I'll make only one of them. And it just will not be replicated again, or maybe someone will copy it, and I guess that's a form of flattery as well. To me it's all fun, and I will be doing some work in terms of innovative materials and innovative finishes. I think that there is a lot more to be explored as well. A lot of guys are working with lasers right now. A lot of guys are working with temperature treatment of different products. I've just ordered a 32 millimeter dial from a guy who's cutting a pattern out of them, just across the border in Malaysia. So lots of these interesting projects that I'm working on, and some of them will eventually be made into mass market products for everyone to partake in as well. And hopefully we get to see some interesting materials. So whether we're talking about your Damascus, or whether we're talking about Damascus, carbon fiber, lots of stuff that we can do.
Cool. All right. Well, looking forward to
it. So I guess, it's also a good chance to shout out that, if anyone has an idea that you think is absolutely left field, I'm probably one of the mod companies that will entertain it to say, hey, let's discuss this. Let's see whether we can do it. Of course, we'll credit you. We'll put it in production for you. I'm always happy to explore stuff like that.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Well, I hope you get a flood of weird ideas in your inbox and you get to choose from the best of
them. I love it. Yeah, I mean, things are just absolutely left field, but sometimes I think it can't be done, and then after talking back and forth a little bit, we come to a conclusion that, hey, if we tweak this, it might work, and then they go away and try it and stuff like that, and it's just been fantastic. Like, there's a guy who is working on sapphire dials, and he wanted to be able to use tritium tubes as well. So so Mod Smith watches, and tritium tubes, as a characteristic, they are a little bit too thick for the pinion height of the NH35. And so he was able to come up with different methods to be able to overcome that. And, you know, I shall not spoil too much of his secret, but yeah, he's currently still the only person who can make those DAOs out in the market. So yeah, really cool stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, super cool. You know, there is a, there's an NH35 powered Invicta has tritium tubes. And I've thought about buying one. I might have talked about this on the podcast already, but I've thought about buying one to harvest the parts. But
there is an NH35 H with a taller pinion, but Seiko doesn't make it available on the commercial market, so it's hard to get. But if you're able to get your hands on one of those with the higher pinion, then yes, you can use your tritium tubes.
Pretty cool.
So I believe Vostok had an NH35 with pre-epic loom as well. I'm not sure whether those were tritium.
I'm not sure either.
So yeah, I've never really. NH35, I think 6 o'clock dial window, really chunky watch as well.
Cool, nice. Yeah, the whole Vostok part, I've kind of like, I don't want to get obsessed with some other thing, so I'm just going to stay away from Vostok and that.
That's a whole other thing to go into.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there are guys doing G-Shock mods these days as well. So why not? Yeah,
I know those are cool too. I just recently, like in the last few months, got a G-Shock, and I had to put a new bezel and a new strap on it. Yeah. So it's got this kind of cool jelly straps.
Oh well, absolutely. So I just placed an order for a carbon case for one of the G-Shocks that I have, I thought to myself, yeah, this is possibly pretty far, but I could possibly take it further. And so I worked with a custom DAO designer to design a custom G-Shock DAO. So yeah, I will eventually be replacing the DAO on the G-Shock, and then I'll post pictures of it.
Sweet. Custom G-Shock dials. Nice. Well, I think that's, any other things that you want to talk about, or should we get into the Instagram recommendation side of things?
I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to talk about what we do at Modboard, and I think I really see it as an opportunity about to work with different artisans out there, and there's so many innovative guys that are working with so many innovative materials. It's not just dials, it's also cases, it's also hands. There's a guy who makes incredible custom hands as well, and of course you have all the strap guys who make straps out of innovative materials. Somebody's story around a piece of leather that had been in the family for a long time, a riding crop kind of thing that was eventually made into a part of a watch strap. Just so much innovation out there. You know, I would really encourage everyone who's listening to this to just broaden your horizons and really look what is out there. It doesn't always have to be the same 20mm, 22mm watch strap. There are so many things that can be done.
Awesome. Yes. And I appreciate that you're actually like a nexus for getting these cool dials and cool cases in actual people's hands. Like it's one thing to have the idea, but to actually produce it and sell it is a whole nother ball game. So without you, it'd be really tough to, it would just be not as fun. The modding community would be less fun. So thank you. Instagram recommendations. Really quick, actually change which room I'm in. I know this is one second. You're going to get a little tour of my house. Sorry, one second. All right, we're back.
Yeah.
Instagram recommendations. So why don't you start?
Yeah. So one of the ones that I really want to shout out is the guy who does these bespoke watches that are custom made, and they've got little 3D figures that are moving within the watch. So koi fish that are swimming around the solar system with moving planets, a father and son on a fishing trip. And these are things that are concepts that you don't think can be incorporated into a watch. Yeah. So the account is called Connie Watch. So K-O-N-N-I watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm checking this out now.
Yes. So I see that frown on your face, but when you look into his pictures, these are 3D figurines that are moving around inside the watch, and that is your second hour and minute hand.
Whoa. So this is... Huh. Are they actually 3D, or are they made...
No, they are actually 3D. So I went to a watch show last year, and I saw these watches in person. So I know myself that it is absolutely real, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've kind of gotten, you know, super interested in the whole micro mechanics and all the, automata. I think it's like amazing, all this.
Yes. But
this is...
Yeah, I mean, if you click on some of his videos that he posts, you can actually see the figures moving and rotating. Yeah. And yeah, okay. They are definitely actual figures in there.
Wow, that's amazing. So cool. All right, well, that's amazing. Great recommendation. Thank you. I'm going to recommend... I think he actually came up tonight. So like Sergey, you mentioned Sergey. So Sergey, I bought a dial from him too. It's he's
Home EDC.
You know, I'm thinking of, wait a minute, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong person.
Sergey Sherban.
Oh yeah, I guess he has two accounts. Yeah.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
He also has a Sergey Sherban. Let's do Home EDC, because that seems to be the one that he has all the dials being posted on. Mm. Yeah, so Home EDC. So this guy he's in Ukraine. He does titanium dials, brass dials. I actually don't know, do you know if he currently is doing titanium dials? I know there was a time where he was essentially displaced and couldn't do, didn't have access to titanium.
Yeah, I didn't ask about titanium specifically, but I just was talking to him yesterday, and I'm getting him to do a square dial for me, so he can definitely do any shape.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. That's okay. I'm looking forward to that. Check out his work. It's really incredible. I think he's probably most famous for this titanium wave dial that he did with multiple, like a rainbow titanium. It's really beautiful.
I've used that dial myself as well. And every time I look at it, I forget how amazing this dial has looked.
Yeah.
What I did with mine, I don't have a watch beside me right now to show you, but what I did with mine was I put it in a titanium Willard case. So I've got a titanium dial in a titanium case on a titanium bracelet.
Nice. Excellent. So many layers. Yeah. Titanium. I'm a big titanium. I prefer it. It's great. Thank you so much for those Instagram recommendations and for having this conversation tonight. And just a little bit of info about Fifth Wrist. Fifth Wrist is a platform for enthusiasts and by enthusiasts. If you want to join, contribute, or write reviews, or even come on the podcast, just reach out to me. You can follow me on Instagram at dad.watch. You can also follow Fifth Wrist on Facebook or Instagram as well. You can like and subscribe the podcast and leave a review. And if you want to learn more about our guest, you can check him out on Instagram. What would be the best way to reach out to you on Instagram?
Yeah, Instagram direct message would be the best way. At Mod Mode Watches. You know, when I thought about the name Mod Mode, it was really because when we talk about being in the zone, of doing something, when you say you're in the zone, like you're on focus mode or you're on family mode or you're in work mode. So when you're zoned in on modding, you're in the mod mode, and that's where the name comes from.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, it is very like therapeutic to do modding. It's, you really have to have your full attention and focus, otherwise you get a scratch dial or worse. Yeah. Well, so great to speak to you. Thank you so much. Have a great day, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I'll see you then.
Fifth Wrist is by the community for the community. We would love you to join the crew via our group chat on Slack. Email us at contact@fifthwrist.com and join the movement.